Purple Heart Homes presents Putting the Pieces Back Together, a forum for veterans and the community to connect. Here are your hosts, veterans John Galena and Brad Borders.
Well, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
I am excellent. How are you doing?
Man, I just jumped in there and said, hey, good afternoon.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful to see you.
It's wonderful to see you today.
I think we should do NPR theme today, where we talk in, you know, subdued voices.
I don't think the listeners
and go,
like
let's
that.
Talk about that's the crafts that we're going to do this weekend.
That, as a matter of fact.
It's a very crafty thing we're doing.
One of our three listeners complained.
Oh, was it really?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
I made that up.
No, you didn't make that up.
Sounded so good.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
Sound good.
You're like, oh, we don't want to go down to two.
It sounded great.
So, keep it up there at three.
Yeah. So, welcome to Putting the Pieces Back Together, presented by Purple Heart Homes. We are a 501c3 based out of Statesville, North Carolina. We're a national organization, but we do stuff locally to ensure that every veteran has a safe place to call home. You can find out more about us at phhusa.org. And we're grateful that you joined us today.
Absolutely.
John Galena is on a secret mission somewhere, as usual.
Oh, yeah. You know, he goes on a lot of those lately.
Lots of secret missions.
And we would love to tell you about them, but
we don't
they're
know.
Secret.
They're we just don't know what he's doing.
So our clearance isn't high enough.
When we don't know what he's doing, we just say it's secret.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we do. And I'm sure it's productive, and I'm sure he's changing somebody's life somewhere.
Absolutely. That he is amazing at doing that. He's changed a lot of veterans' lives through being the co-founder of Purple Heart Homes, and made a big impact on a lot of people.
That is true. Absolutely.
Speaking of making a big impact on a lot of people, we've got a great guest today,
Dr.
Tim Murphy.
A great segue. Yes, Dr. Tim Murphy is here. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Let's say hi to our guest, Dr. Tim.
Whoa! Hey, how's it going? We got a really loud thing right there. That was awesome. Dr. Murphy, it is wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much, and we're glad you're here. And we've got music just blaring in my ears, and it's awesome, right? Could it be Metallica? I've got a request.
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
Okay. All right.
Dr. Murphy,
hey,
he's there.
Dr.
Yeah.
Murphy, there he is. How are you, sir?
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, glad to have you here. Yeah. So we've been looking forward to having you on. It's been a couple of months in the process, and we're really thankful. Can you tell our listeners about your man? Maybe kind of your bio. And what led you to the military, and get us to where you're at.
Yeah. So I've been a psychologist for 40 some years. Probably longer than you guys have been alive, I guess. And I worked at hospitals. I had a practice I worked at, and enjoyed those thoroughly. But also was in a situation where I became increasingly concerned at the way things are going for our country with healthcare. So I ran for and got elected to the state senate, and then not having enough punishment or masochism in me for that, I ran for and was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives and represented Southwestern Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Left that a few years ago. But while I was in there, I should say throughout my life, I always had this feeling that I needed to do more. And there's multiple reasons for that. Some of it, honestly, frankly, it comes from growing up in a big family that we didn't have a lot of money. My mother would never allow us to say we were poor. But it was also a situation where my dad drank whatever money we had. There was some violence in the home too. So it grew up this attitude, if only I could do one more thing, things would be better. Maybe something would improve. And so we're always achieving. And so having put myself through school, got my doctorate degree, started my practice, work at big name hospitals, state Senate, U.S. Congress. But while I was in Congress, I felt here I am voting to send people to war. I ought to be doing something more than just doing that. So I applied for and received a commission to the United States Navy Medical Service Corps, became a psychologist, and worked at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center at Bethesda in a traumatic brain injury PTSD unit. So imagine my life. I would literally show up for duty on a Monday or Tuesday, work there in boots, in my uniform, take the metro back to the Capitol, quickly change clothes, go on the House floor, and we'd vote. Very hectic schedule, but got to do some really a fascinating active duty time. So it was reserved, but I did an active duty time and a couple aircraft carriers at Carl Vinson, the Ronald Reagan, the Theodore Roosevelt, flew on and off the George Washington. And also some work with assessment selection with Navy SEAL teams, the East and West Coast. So it was a wonderful honor. And now I am, when I left Congress and just recognizing I've got to deal with a lot of trauma in my own life, and struggling with a number of things, really got into reading more and more of the Apostle Paul. I figured I have to get my life together. Because when you're away from home for all those years, you don't have much of a marriage, quite frankly. And we were pretty distant in there. It's together. We're still together after a lot of years. I don't know why. I think my wife forgets things. I would say that's a secret to happy marriage. Marry someone who's forgiving. And if you can't get forgiving, get forgetful.
Yeah, that's right.
But I really began to read more and more the life of the Apostle Paul. Because I'm thinking, boy, if there's anybody who has been through trauma, it's been Paul. Start off hunting down and being the prosecutor and executioner for the early Christians. And later on, after his road to Damascus moment, he was the persecutor. He was the hunted.
Absolutely.
He was beaten with rods 3 times. He was whipped 39 lashes 5 times. He was stoned and left for dead. He was robbed. He was kicked out of town. He was debated. Everywhere he went, he was hounded. Shipwrecked for a couple of weeks, floating around in the Mediterranean Sea for a day and a half, bitten by a snake. And I'm just getting started. And so what I really began to look at is writings of what was it that he had? He should have had overwhelming PTSD with all its debilitating symptoms of depression and suicidality and broken relationships and agitation and anger and a whole host of things. But he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, somebody has to have written a book about this. And I saw nobody had. And I kept hearing this. It sounds like hallucination. It's not, but I just keep hearing this drive in my head says, you got to write this. And I'm no biblical scholar, but I really sat down at my keyboard day after day after day and wrote, would send over drafts and information over to some pastors. It sounds like the opening of a joke. So this Methodist pastor, this Evangelical Assembly of God pastor, this Catholic priest, Catholic bishop, and 2 Jewish friends get together.
Right.
And what I would do is I would run these by them, but the book is laced with stories, biblical stories. You know, when it comes to courage, talk about Gideon. When it comes to fear, running away and trauma, we talk about Elijah hiding in the cave. But also stories from the Navy, people I've known, and people who have had overwhelming trauma in their life but have gotten better. And I call this book The Christ Cure, over here on my shoulder, The Christ Cure, 10 Biblical Steps to Heal from Trauma, Tragedy, and PTSD, 10 Biblical Ways to Heal from Trauma, Tragedy, and PTSD. But I subtitle it A Handbook for the Broken and the People Who Love Them, and also for clergy who want to know, how do you work with someone who has trauma? Because about 40 to 50% of people will turn towards clergy for help, but only about 10% of clergy say they know what to do about it.
Yeah, wow. I agree.
And
among my colleagues and psychologists, 50 or 60% say they're agnostic or atheist, so they have no business treating someone with a faith issue.
Yeah.
And the rest really don't know what to do. I find as I go to conventions and psychology.
Hey, Tim, we're going to have to put a pin in it right there. I'm sorry, Dr. Murphy, I apologize. We're delighted to hear more of it when we get back on Putting the Pieces Back Together.
Welcome back to Putting the Pieces Back Together, presented by Purple Heart Homes. We are so glad that you came in and decided to tune in with us today. We've got an amazing guest, Dr. Tim Murphy, who's written an incredible book called The Christ Cure, 10 Biblical Ways to Heal from Trauma, Tragedy, and PTSD.
Absolutely.
And as everybody knows, I'm putting the pieces back together. We started this show 2.5 years ago as a way to connect up and try to find different ways for people to put the pieces back together of their life, for both people that served in the military and those that they love as they come home and transition from military service. And Dr. Murphy, not only as an accomplished author, as we can see, but has served in the halls of Congress and served as an officer in the Navy, helping countless folks across that formation.
Gambit, right?
He's got everything, right?
And he has been a psychologist longer than I have been alive.
Yes, and when he said,
not me. Not you.
I'm thinking maybe Dr. Murphy and I are probably fellows that were might have been born in the 60s together. Yeah. So I always tell people that I was born before the Tet Offensive.
Oh, gosh.
In Vietnam. So, Dr. Murphy, thank you so much for being here. And we were talking before the break, and you were kind of going over the book and about the life of the Apostle Paul and how much mm-hmm. trauma that he went through. And I know this, that the word trauma in Greek means wound. During our break, we were kind of talking about this idea of a soul wound or moral injury. Can you speak to that? Because it's very different from PTSD. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, moral injury is when we engage in a behavior that contradicts our own moral standards. Assuming, and this is a very important point, assuming one has moral standards, because in today's world, there's a lot of mental health professionals, a lot of people that no longer have a moral standard that goes with religion. Yeah. We know that people, for example, who have had a traumatic event, about 70% of the population will face trauma in their lives, life-threatening, major, you know, it can be financial devastation, a sudden disease, et cetera. About 20% will go on to have prolonged symptoms, and 10% will have the symptoms of PTSD with insomnia, hypervigilance, agitation, anger, perhaps addiction, a whole host of things. But sometimes what that is, it's not a wound one can see. It's not loss of life and limb, but it's feeling like I did something that contradicts my core principles and core values. It could be a person always felt like they weren't going to, thou shalt not kill, but they were in a situation where they had to. Yeah. A friend of mine who is a Vietnam veteran has real trouble on Christmas Day because he remembers that in Vietnam, that the North Vietnamese, they were had to hold a bridge. And the North Vietnamese were on the other side of that bridge. And they put the women and children of the village in front of them and then pushed forward.
Oh, man.
And the that's American just... soldiers had to fire at them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
In order to stop them. Yeah. It's hard to get over that kind of moral injury. Yeah. It's hard in any case to do that. We recognize that things have to be done in war. We feel somehow we've betrayed ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've abandoned our belief. Perhaps we feel that God has abandoned us. Mm-hmm. And those are very tough situations to overcome. Abandonment and betrayal are some of the most difficult traumas we face, because at least whatever else happens to us in the world, we may feel, at least I can trust and hope that there's better days ahead. Mm-hmm. But when we feel that abandonment, we say, where do I go? Who do I turn to? Who can I trust? And that's when we feel horribly and terribly alone. And it's difficult, but not impossible, but it's difficult to deal with.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You've been, this book was just released last year, judging from the copyright. It's called The Christ Cure. I'm assuming it's available on Amazon and all the other places where folks can get books. It's in
you get there. I also have a website, drtimmurphy.com. Easy to remember, drtimmurphy.com.
Yeah,
and you can access it through that.
Yeah, we're going to add that to the link so everybody can see that website. And check it out. It is available right there on Amazon. It's also, for those of you who don't want to read but you want to hear it, you can listen to it on Audible.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ways you can check it out. So
Dr. Murphy, tell us a little bit about it. I served a lot of years in the special operations community on the Army side. And can you speak to your... You mentioned in the first segment that you had done some stuff out at BUDS, which is the Navy SEALs, kind of their selection and assessment training. Can you speak to some of the issues that you encountered there dealing with that sort of maybe an elite level type of audience there?
No, I can't tell you any of that.
That was a great answer.
I don't want to overstate that because a couple of things. When you're medical service corps officer and Navy SEALs are doing stuff, they say, sir, stand way over there.
Yeah.
Get out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't want you getting hurt.
That's fair enough.
But what we would do, and I work with some pretty cool people there, and they all the credit goes to them. But learning about assessment selection. What is interesting for special forces, for a long time, it used to be selection by whoever can stand it the longest.
Yeah.
And what they began to understand is that if you screen people ahead of time for their physical abilities and psychological traits too, that you can figure out if you drew this as a quadrant, so plus or minus in terms of passing the medical or the physical aspects and plus or minus in passing the psychological aspects. Those who had a plus in each category did a much better chance of going well. Those at a plus one minus the other were given a second chance to test again. Those were minus in both, don't even try.
Yeah.
And what it came down to, they're looking for certain characteristics in people. So we would go through a wide range of psychological tests, whether it was for people who were going to be operators themselves or their support teams. And you would know this, that only a small percentage are the tip of the spear. Only a small percent are the real combatants. Behind them, you have to have specialists in everything, from dietitians to engineers to munition specialists to drivers. Mm-hmm. All those people, boats in the case of the Navy. I don't know if you guys in the Army use boats at all. They're these
we
things
do?
That keep from sinking.
Oh,
in
I'm
water.
A Marine.
Anyhow, it was a very special characteristic. Now, what would happen is we'd go through this, and then at the end, there'd also be some interviews. And I want to tell you something that was really important. And it was one of the characteristics I note that in what I've identified in my book, The Christ Cure, that these four stages of dealing with trauma. One is the first stage is resilience. The second stage is resistance in the battle. The third stage is recovery after the battle. And the fourth stage is renewal. But in this, one of the aspects of in recovery is you have to be humble. You have to be humble to note, can I recover from this? Can I deal with things honestly? Can I have hope? All those things. Can I deal with guilt and shame and forgiveness? But if you don't have humility, it's tough. Now, the reason I say that is, I won't give too much details, but there's this one person who wanted to be a combat engineer and brilliant and did well on these tests and answered everything well. But when it came time for the final interview, imagine the intimidating table with the commanding officer, the XO, and psychologists and other people sitting there, and asked him a couple of questions. Because I tell you, you've ever had a difficult time in your life you overcame. He said, no, I pretty much handled whatever's been thrown at me. Mm. And the CO said, have you ever, one of the questions is, would you be willing to break the law if that was a command? And the guy hesitated and says, well, have you ever broken the law? He says, no, I never have. CO said, you've never broken any law at all? No, I haven't, he said. I'm going to give you a third chance.
Yeah.
Have you ever broken law? And the guy says, no, I haven't. I really stick strictly with the law there. And the CO says, what was the speed limit on the road coming out here? And after a long pause, Vell said, I really don't know what it was. And at that point, the CO closed the file and said, thank you very much for your application. We wish you well in your service to the best of the Navy.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
And the guy was like, what just happened here? So I asked the CO in this, I said, hey, when you're looking for characteristics for SEALs and support teams and special forces, what's the number one personality characteristic you want? And without hesitation, he said, humility.
Yeah.
Wow.
Everybody thinks these are tough guys that boast, heavy drinkers, you know, womanizers, all this stuff, but they got to be humble. Because when we're doing that after action report, I got to know that guy's going to be honest with me. When we're doing something else, I want to know that man or that woman is going to be bare bones honest, accept responsibility. And that is a key feature of dealing with trauma. And yet we wrap ourselves in arrogance and hubris, or what I call the arrogance of self-pity sometimes, that blocks us from even dealing with the traumas we face. Mm-hmm. And so we can't get better.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a characteristic there.
That's interesting. Yeah. So when I was at Fort Bragg, went through the civil affairs selection and assessment and the qualification course a long time ago, and I got interviewed. They had all kinds of cameras and stuff up while we were doing all of our training, especially on our FTX. And I got interviewed by the psych, and we had to do a lot of personality testing. And then so our last week before graduation, we all got called in, and somebody came in and was like, "Hey, Chaplain, the psych wants to see you." And I was like, "What'd I do?" Right? And I was like, "I don't know, man. You gotta go see him." So I walked in, and he kind of looked at me, and he was like, so you like being a chaplain? And I was like, yeah, I really, really like it. He's like, you find a lot of meaning and value in it? And I was like, yeah, I absolutely do. I love helping people. And I feel like I've called to do this. And he's like, yeah, you think you're pretty good at it? I was like, well, I don't know how good I am, but, you know, I'm trying, right? And he was like, okay, I think you ought to be a chaplain, continue to do that. And I was like, cool, right? Because that's what I did. Wow. That was my job. I was doing this course. Well, another buddy of mine got called in, and I saw him at Chow later on. And he was like, hey, man, did you see the psych? And I was like, yeah. And I said, you? He was like, yeah. He said, well, what did he say to you? And I was like, well, he said, I was doing fine. You know, everything's cool. And then I was like, what did he say to you? He said, I probably ought to find something else to do.
So like, what you're saying, your takeaway is there's you passed the personality exam, Brett?
I passed it. Yeah, somehow I eked by over the finish line. But that's fascinating because I understand completely what you're talking about. And then having that idea of humility being the most important thing within that community because – I've seen it and I've heard it, man, and I understand it completely.
That is awesome. And we're going to hear more about that and many other perspectives in the Christ Cure when we get back from our break, where you've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together, and I can't talk.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You're doing fine.
You're doing fine. We'll see you in a few.
Maybe. Welcome back. You're listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together. We've got a great guest with us, Dr. Tim Murphy. And Brad Borders is sitting here with me again today.
It is just phenomenal to be here sharing space with you.
I know.
Breathing the same air. Did you know this about molecules? You want to know something about molecules?
I never know where you're getting ready to go with something.
That we're all made out of molecules.
Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm made out of molecules. This desk is made out of molecules. This microphone's made out of molecules. My wife and Dr. Tim, we're all made out of molecules. And did you know that at some point during this broadcast, that some of your molecules got into me? And some of mine got into you, and some of your molecules are in the table.
That's a little scary.
It's just physics,
physics.
It's string theory, and I don't understand.
I don't think that's string theory. That's actually nothing to do with string theory. I am not a physicist,
but I play one on TV.
Heck, I'm not even a doctor, but you know who is.
Dr. Tim Murphy.
Yeah, let's get back to him.
All right. Dr. Tim, thank you for being here. Doc was telling us during the break about some, in previous segment, about his time working with the SEALs. He served at in a PTSD and TBI clinic at treatment facility at Walter Reed in Bethesda. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about what that entails and how do you... You know, somebody comes in and they're at a maximum level stress event in their life from whatever trauma they've been through. And what are you trying to get them to after their time there?
Well, this was a newer unit that I think was set up in 2009. Dr. David Williamson started this. And at that time, it was the only inpatient unit because at that point, a lot of people were being misdiagnosed.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of head injuries because what was happening is with the blasts that were happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, the roadside bombs, et cetera, there was a lot of severe head trauma. Mm-hmm. And so there's a few levels of this. So a mild traumatic brain injury might stun you. You might see stars, maybe unconscious for a minute or two or less, but you come back and maybe have some headaches and other things, but you move on. When you get to moderate and severe, there you're really talking about the skull opening up, loss of brain tissue, and some significant changes where you may lose your ability to understand, to listen, to talk, lose a limb or something like that. So in the very severe end. So what this incredible clinic did, it was this manned by a psychiatrist, neuropsychiatrist, psychologist, occupational therapy, physical therapy, nurses, staff, just absolute best. And I like to say, as we saw the real heroes. Mm. We saw the people who had it the worst. But the dynamics that took place there that I was involved with, and it was such an honor and humbling honor to be there, is the dynamics of that is how the families dealt with the loss. That is, their soldier lived, but is a very different person.
Mm. Oh, wow.
As one spouse told me, where her husband was pretty severely damaged. I won't go into the detail, but she said, I sent this handsome young soldier to war, and I don't know who this man is that came back.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she also said, if it takes me years, I will teach him to laugh and love again.
Wow.
I mean, I tell more of the story in my book, but the issue is it just incredible stories of courage for how families dealt with them, and sadly, I know we see many of those commercials on TV where people talk about the families and the great work you do to help people with homes. But the sad thing is there still are people out there that when that soldier does come home with the wounds of war, some families do abandon them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some marriages do break up.
Yeah.
People feel they can't function anymore. They don't have the finances. They end up homeless. They end up alone. And in some cases, the families will cash a disability check. So it can be pretty abusive. So that's why it is so critically important for veterans to be surrounded by a network of other veterans and a supportive community, mm-hmm. Not to coddle them. And this is really important. Veterans, they don't want to be coddled and told, you know, you can't handle it. And a lot of them don't even necessarily like the commercials that show veterans crying and say, I don't think I can make it. But it says, yeah, it is tough. It is really tough. And make no mistake about it. But I've always believed that there is tremendous hope in recovery. And I have seen people with phenomenal problems really become very functional and very strong. And I like to say that we can become victims because of the trauma. We can become survivors despite the trauma, but we can also become thrivers because of the trauma. And that is, we take it, incorporate it into our life and say, you know what? Jesus had it tougher than I, Paul had it tougher than I. I'm going to learn from this and turn this into a source of inspiration and strength. It doesn't erase the memories. It doesn't forgive those who have harmed us intentionally or accidentally. That's not our issue. It's up to us to forgive. Mm-hmm. It's up to us to put things behind us and to move forward. Well, how's the saying go? I can't do anything about yesterday, and I can barely function with today, but I need to focus on today and deal with tomorrow another time. Mm. That's where our energies need to go, and that's where I think the cure for our trauma lies.
My daughter and my mom read a book. We've been reading a book at least once a year for the last 20 years called Walk Two Moons, and one of the quotes from that book is that you can't keep the birds of sadness from flying over your head, but you can keep them from nesting in your hair.
That's true.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is actually a really great quote.
It really is.
It is a beautiful quote. It actually comes from Martin Luther.
Really?
Martin Luther coined that in the 1500s. It's a really good quote, just knowing that it stuff happens,
yeah.
Right? Stuff
Absolutely.
Happens. But I don't have to let it define me and ruin me, mm-hmm. you know? Hey, Dr. Murphy, I'm really interested can you tell us a little bit about your faith journey? Would that be okay?
Sure. It's ongoing. I know I was once on a bike ride with a bunch of veterans, and a fellow who I didn't even know pulls up alongside me and says, can you tell me about when you were born again?
Yeah, right.
And I said, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
And I said, which time? He said, the time. I said, well, if there's only one time, then you ain't paying attention. He says, no. The time you gave your life up for the Lord Jesus Christ. And I said, okay, first of all, my name is Tim. This is my wife, Nan. You need to find out who I am first, because that's a deeply personal question. Yeah. But the issue is, I said, you know, my faith when I was 7 or 17 or 27 or 37, whatever, it needs to change and mature.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but, you know, when did you give your life? He said, you're not listening to me. So I said, okay, you want to play Bible trivia? I said, here we go. I said, remember Romans 12:2, where Paul said to be transformed mm-hmm. by a renewing of your mind. He never said one and done.
Yeah.
Jesus never turned towards his apostles. You guys got this? You good? Yeah. Go home. Goodbye. Yeah. It was like, you have work to do. And yeah. he had to constantly remind the apostles, and Paul had to constantly remind people. His letters to Corinth were, hey, you guys, straighten your act out. What the heck are you doing down there? Quit worshiping the goddess of love and sex. You need to keep your life together. Mm-hmm. He sent his letter on to Romans before he was ever in Rome, but he worked on these things. And I see it that way too. But my point is this, throughout my life, did I read the Bible? Yes. Did I go to church? Yes. But you know, it's, faith ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like the waves that come in. Sometimes it's very strong. Sometimes it's not so strong. But it is something that we usually turn towards when we're in a heck of a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Or when things are going well, we think, I got this. I recently saw an interview with Dr. Fauci, you know, the head of the CDC, and he was talking about how he was raised in the Catholic faith, but he really doesn't need it anymore because he feels his ethics are strong enough. He doesn't need to go to church anymore.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, I've mastered it.
Nobody's that strong.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I'm not sure they would have selected him for the Buds class.
I don't think that they would have.
On the humility meter, it
was. Right, yeah. You've never grown 36 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. Yeah.
There you go.
I got it. I'm good. I've never broken the law. Yeah. I got
it. It takes a lot of humility. And I found it in this, the more I read about these issues and just really dug into the stories of the biblical stories, I realized I need this all the time.
Yeah.
And actually in writing this book, it was very transformational for me because as I wrote this, I would read these sections and say, where did this come from? Now, listen, I'm not trying to be goofy. There was no bolt of lightning that came down. I was never knocked off my horse on the road to Damascus. But I tell you, something was weird that I just felt I was his vessel. Mm. And I would write. And I would take it back to my collection of, you know, the Methodists, the Assembly of God, the priest, the bishop, the two Jewish friends. And what do you think of this? And these things came together in a way that I think the experience I've had to in dealing
Hold on 1 second. We're going to roll to commercial. We're going to pick right up. Let's just put a pin in that thing. We'll be right back here in a couple of minutes.
Welcome back to Putting the Pieces Back Together. You're here with your hosts, Brad Borders, and me, Devil Dog Devin.
That was nice.
You sound like the guy that does the movie, you know, the movie In a World, right?
In a world where there was only one spoon and you needed a fork.
Perfect. There's your social media clip for the day.
Yeah.
I needed a spoon. That was the name of my punk band in 1983.
I got that backwards.
I needed a spoon.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. we're so glad you're here. It's our final segment of the day, and we're joined by our my new friend, Dr. Tim Murphy. And I've just had a blast hearing his story. He's written a book called The Christ Cure. It was written, published last year, and it is 10 Biblical Ways to Heal from Trauma, Tragedy, and PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Murphy served in the United States Navy. He served in the halls of Congress, both at the state level and at the national level. And this book is something that I am really looking forward to diving into deeper. And we've just been having a great time discussing his experiences.
I wonder if there's anything about theft in that book, because you're talking about stealing my book.
Against the law. I've never broken the law.
Ever.
Yeah, that's the bar of the book.
I've never broken the law. So, what are you talking about? I'll just put this over here. Right?
I hope it's a book you buy, and I might as well put in a plug. I hope it's a book other people buy, because I do take the $1, in some case 50 or 75 cents to get off that book, and I put that towards my program for veterans and first responders so that we don't have to charge them. We take insurance, but a lot of them don't have much more beyond that. So through a whole program, it takes a few thousand dollars to do it. So
that's a great segue. Tell us about the program and what you do for veterans that are struggling.
So as a psychologist, I'll do what considered traditional therapy with them, although I do it. I always ask them, do you belong to a certain religion, your faith? Is it okay if we incorporate those principles in our discussion? And very rarely, I think only one person said, no, I'm an atheist. I don't really want to talk about that. I said, it's good. Then I'll tell them some. But I told them stories. I didn't realize they were Bible stories. So I do that. But we also work with John Cole, K-O-L-B, who was a four-time Super Bowl champion. He protected Terry Bradshaw's blind side in those years in the 70s when the Steelers won four Super Bowls. People don't know this, but John felt that since at that time the war was going on, and some of his classmates were over there, and another Steeler was over there in Vietnam. He says, I can't not do anything. So he actually signed up for the Army National Guard while he was playing for the Steelers. And he would do drill weekends while he's playing for the Steelers. Can you imagine doing a drill weekend in the guard and then quick Sunday morning get your uniform on? He even said one time I'm not sure it was a sergeant or their commanding officer said, hey, listen, we're not going to muster again till tomorrow or till Monday morning. So if any of you need to do anything, we're not going to muster till then. Take attendance, right? And Kolb's standing there at attention. He says, which means that some of you have to maybe go for a ride or something and come back. We will not take attendance again till Monday. Yes. So, for example, if one of you needs to drive to Green Bay, you might want to get to. And John is thinking, he's talking to me. I can't. But anyways, what happens is John does these intensive fitness and workouts with people. This is not your Planet Fitness, do the machines. There's a lot of balance and coordination, a lot of very physically challenging activities, because we know that physical fitness, cardio and strength training is a big boost. In fact, for people with mild depression, it is as or more effective than medication, speaking combined with psychological work. Also nutrition and diet. His son, Caleb, who was a wrestler for Wisconsin, they take people out on adventures, everything from mountain climbing to cross the Grand Canyon to local hikes. There's another group of some of our graduates have put together that we have 1,000 acres in an adjoining county. And there we already have some equine therapy, some dog training, but a lot more outdoor activities as we go forward and build our lodge and our barn with those things too. So it's a growing program. Built by veterans for veterans. I like to say that, you know, there's many a program. There's like 40,000 different veterans related programs in the country.
Yeah.
And it's everything from Purple Heart Homes to, you know, the mom and pop who pack shoe boxes with toiletries and send them overseas. But the thing about them, we are not we're not the Walmart. We're not the Nordstroms. We don't have the big people behind us packing in millions. I like to say we're more like the corner grocery store, the country store, where it's a lot of people through our grit and determination out there helping veterans. People, I'm really proud and honored to work with these folks, because we're just there helping each other out. Nothing fancy, but we work hard at it, and the Lord's with us the whole way.
What's it called, Doc?
My program is called Fortis, but the program that does the outdoor work is called Gunny's Ridge, like Gunny Sergeant.
Yep.
G-U-N-N-Y, not Gunnery, but G-U-N-N-Y Ridge.
Gunny's Ridge.
And the other part that John Cole is called Adventures and Training with a Purpose. But Gunny's Ridge, or I used to have a website for Fortis, but quite frankly, we were doing so many cutbacks. It says rather than pay even to have a website, I'm just going to put that back in our program. So, but I am on LinkedIn you can find me there at Tim Murphy on LinkedIn too. Okay. So that's where I post a lot of my things. And Dr. Tim Murphy is my website.
Yeah. So yeah, go to drtimmurphy.com, right?
Easy day.
Yeah. And so please, please go and check out his website. That's really fascinating. So the program that does the outdoor stuff, how is that is it structured and people come and stay there and for a week at a time or 2 weeks at a time? How does that work?
Well, right now our hikes and our activities may be an overnight camp out.
Got it.
Maybe a retreat. We're hoping as we build our log cabin and our barn that we'll have people there for several days, especially for veterans. Where we'll have some structured talks and other training, but also be land navigation and challenges.
Oh, that's cool.
These aspects. And quite frankly, what I feel a real need to do is take clergy who are not used to working with veterans and first responders and say, we'll put them through a mini boot camp. And colleagues who are psychologists and counselors, I've been looking for years to find another psychologist who was a veteran to work with me in this area. Can't find someone, especially someone who's also a man or woman of faith. So I said, you know what? I'll put them through it. And so we're planning a program where we'll have a more intensive boot camp for them, put them through 3 or 4 days. If you can't give us 4 years, can you give us a few days?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Have a mini version of that experience. So we think that's going to be an important part of their training.
So is that a call to action a little bit too? If there's somebody out there that was a psychologist and wants to come and take your program so they can learn how to do what you're doing? Yeah,
I love it. And what I do is so my book is a basic, but I also have a workbook. I want to say if people buy the book, there's a couple of people without my permission who put out workbooks on Amazon, and they're reaping benefits from taking my material. Oh. Please don't buy their stuff.
Okay.
I have my own workbook that I use when I do. So I do retreats with people. We go through, we have people do a timeline of their life. What are the traumas? Yeah. What are the good things?
Yeah.
And then we work through resilience, resistance, recovery, renewal. And in each case, have people learn about courage versus fear, hope versus hopelessness. What it is to have forgiveness versus condemnation, strength versus weakness. And in each case, help people work through that, understand these are principles in their life that they feel abandoned, they can't do anything. And by the end of our workshops, our retreats, people leave there feeling, I really have all along had the tools I needed, and I've never been alone. Mm. I've never been abandoned. I've always had God with me.
Yeah.
And even though friends may have left me, I've got new friends and I have a new way. And again, my whole thing is hope. I'm amazed when I read the reviews people posted on Amazon. I've never met these people, but they'll write reviews such as, this is life-changing. This is the best book on trauma I've ever read. Mm. There's even a person who's an atheist who wrote, I'm an atheist, but this book has really been a great book for me. Yeah. So mm. I, I, I look at those things, and I hope people will see it and understand that there is a lot of hope for them. And if I can help them with doing some training or workshop, send me a message.
Give
me a
yeah. Minute. Hey, we're winding down the end of the show. We got a few minutes left, but I go back to those four R words that you used. Was resilience and then resistance. Can yes. Tell me about the role of resistance within the recovery process.
So resilience, we talk a lot about that. And I'm going to pull my book here. So
yeah, sure. Please do.
But in that, when we talk about resilience, there are certain characteristics a person has to deal with in that. They have to choose strength instead of weakness. Yeah. They have to, humility is an important part too. But when it comes to what I refer to as resilience is how you build up things before the fight. When it comes to resistance, those are the skill sets you need in the fight. Hmm. That's courage. That has to do with having a team and community around you. Mm-hmm. That is to build up characteristics that Paul talks a lot about of endurance, which is like your defense, persistence, which is offense. In other words, you have to be willing to fight. Now, after the battle, and now you're dealing with your wounds. Now it's something entirely different. Now, as you move into recovery, it's hope. Mm-hmm. It is dealing with guilt versus shame. Guilt is, I did something wrong. Shame is, I'm broken. I can't be repaired. And a really, really important aspect is forgiveness. To be able mm-hmm. to, what I use these six words, God forgives, others might, I must. And a lot of times we think, what I did is so traumatic. No, God can never forgive me for that. I'll continue to be a problem. And yet, if we have to accept God's forgiveness because it's already paid up front, we have to stop relying on the forgiveness of others. We can apologize, we can do those things, but listen, I've wronged people, probably never going to forgive me. Mm-hmm. And I've had difficulties there too, but here it's a matter that the main thing is being able to forgive ourselves, be able to say, yeah. I have to let this go. And when it comes to forgiving someone else, it doesn't justify what they did. If they did something wrong or heinous, we're not there to be the judge and the prosecutor.
Right.
We're there to heal ourselves as Jesus told us to do.
We are tracking down the same railroad track, brother. I'll tell you, and the folks that come to my class, I tell them this. I was like, look, you got to give yourself a break, right? You just got,
Absolutely.
You've been piling rocks in your rucksack and you got to take them out. So
we've just got just a little bit left. Is there anything else that you want to make sure you hit on?
Last word for you.
There's always hope.
Yeah,
that's the main thing of people out there. There's always hope. That I've had times where I cursed that the sunrise. I didn't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
And I know what that is like. But I also know that the day one understands that you cannot unset the sun, there's a reason and power to go forward. We can do that. And I want people to hear that and read this message of hope in my book and understand we can all do a lot better.
That's awesome. You've been great. Nice. Dr. Tim Murphy, you've been listening, Putting the Pieces Back Together.